Hello and welcome to the Bookends Cafe. This is a podcast for listeners who have a professional role but a curious and interesting mindset. A podcast for listeners that have a serious job and who have a willingness to hear the opinions of others and possibly make positive change to their life or their job because of those opinions. Or simply it's a podcast around leadership and a love of learning, and you can listen to it whilst walking your dog. So we are
Kelly
and Judith, and together we are
Bookends Leadership. How are you stealing my joke?
A small but effective boutique coaching and mentoring business for individuals and teams who are either stuck or otherwise needing an injection of new thinking to achieve personal or business goals. For your listening pleasure, we are delighted to bring you our podcasts every Monday, either onto iTunes or onto our website. Working to a theme, we discuss books, online material, theory and practice, and we leave you with takeaways and activities to pass or fail. But first, we always start with our favourite topic, which is food or a recipe. But today it's slightly different because I've got to just criticise my colleague here.
Again.
Who, apart from, as you all know from previous podcasts, is a useless cook, hopeless cook, has absolutely no pleasure or sort of thought process involved in the whole process of eating. So whereas I have the love of looking at a recipe and preparing it, and watching people enjoy what I've done, eating it nicely, slowly. I cook a meal the other night. Kelly came round and I put it in front of her, and within about 2 minutes, it had been inhaled. While she'd been telling me stories about other things, it had absolutely nothing to do with food, didn't mention it, didn't say how marvellous that I'd slaved over a hot steak, you know, and she just inhaled it.
Yeah.
And that's her way of actually having food. She inhales it, whereas I have this idea that, you know, it's a social activity. So would you like to respond to that, Kelly?
I just think you've got rocks in your head, Laycock. I think you're being awful to me. You're bullying me. But it is very, very true. Food in our house wasn't enjoyable.
Mm.
It was Dad would work long hours, so by the time we would have had dinner, obviously he'd be home about 8, and we'd have to inhale it because we were all desperately needing to go to bed. Dad was always wanting to have dinner with us, but there was never any enjoyment from anybody's point of view. I know I try and get my kids D nice and early, or not nice and early, but much earlier than 8 o'clock, but it's never been something that I've enjoyed or laboured over. So maybe that's the reason why.
That's why you don't cook, probably, but it is interesting.
But how good can I actually eat sushi?
Well, yes, now
Not a crumb was dropped.
I am impressed. This is the only woman I have ever seen who can grab a sushi, get to the car, get in the car, get out of a car park by sticking a...
Whilst eating. There's all the preparation.
Sushi. That's right. Got out of the car park, drove all the way, eating the sushi, and there was not so much as one speck of rice on her shirt, trousers, or on the floor of the car. I am impressed.
And that's not sushi that was wrapped with
no,
That was non-edged sushi.
Non-edged, I was...
Give me five. Come on, give me something.
Yeah. This is from the woman who dribbles every time.
Yeah. That's you, not me.
Food. Yes. So today's podcast, getting off our topic of
We've got work to do.
Yes, we have. I'm sorry.
Gosh.
Now, the title is Going Back to the Power of Teams, and the reason it's called Going Back to the Power of Teams because we did do an earlier podcast on the power of teams, but there's been, you know, in both of us, professional development opportunities, there's been career opportunities, and, of course, with our business opportunities, to look at that whole team process again and really let you have some guidance and some instruct about how we have actually moderated our ability to work with and to coach a team. So, Kelly, I think you're going to present your research.
Yes, I'm all singing or dancing today. I think there's a good point. Teams are changing, and the way in which a team changes is slowly, carefully, logically, but you can influence that change through, I think, an element of diversity and tweaking positive change through a much more diverse approach. Or you can select a team or put in place selection processes for a team that is much more likely to set you up to some of our outcomes as team coaches. So I've got two things to talk to you about today. The first is actually the results of a leadership survey that came out at the end of last year. And it's as a result of a leadership survey that a group that I chair, the Women in Safety and Health Steering Committee, released in consultation with our friends at SafeSearch. So we put just a voluntary survey up on LinkedIn just and other various social media. And it was about leadership, but essentially it was about the diversity and inclusiveness requirements in the health and safety industry to actually allow for leaders to better lead. So we were overwhelmed by the amount of people that responded to this survey. And the thing that I like actually about reviewing the results is the respondents of the survey, as I said, we were stoked by the amount of people that actually responded. They are so representative of our industry.
Yeah.
Which was nice. I was completely petrified that the only people that would respond would be our network.
Yeah.
But largely the respondents were more male than female. Mm-hmm. So there was almost 60% were male. Predominantly they were over 40 years of age. So 67% were over 40.
Which is us.
Yep. They were predominantly identifying as Australian. So 87% were Australian. 95% were identifying as being straight. They were qualified to differing degrees. So some were diploma qualified, so around about a third, and some were master's qualified. Yeah. So if you look at the health safety industry, that makes sense for those people that are pounding the pavement out in the advisor coordinator space and some of those that are leading teams. I'm not saying that's not a judgment. That's just the way the industry.
That's the spread.
The spread. Yeah, you're sort of vet qualified or you're sort of qualified at a higher level. Predominantly, the respondents were more likely to be employed in a big organisation. So about almost 60% were big or they're working in micro big businesses like ours.
Oh, right.
So that makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were largely full-time. So 82% of our respondents were full-time, which is we wanted that call out.
And can I say, but that's really interesting because that goes against sort of national figures that show predominantly until very recently employment was part-time in a lot of these segmented areas all on offer was part-time. So that's a damn statistic.
Because I think that when you have very casualised part-time workforces but they're in big sectors, it quite often I think influences the Australian workforce. Because my experience in my career is that jobs are largely full-time.
Yeah.
There's really not that flexibility there. And so that was what we found. And then we also found that the other piece of the respondents were that most were very experienced. So 40% had over 15 years and 30% had between 10 and 15 years. So basically 60% of the people who responded had more than 10 years experience.
So you've got a lot of baby boomers.
Yes, and that's the industry. That's the health and safety industry.
You've got males and you've got baby boomers.
Yep. And there's a whole lot of work to unpack in that. Nevertheless, I think it was great that we've got actually a target market. Yes. It was wonderful to see, though, the themes come from the survey. Firstly, is that there's still, even in 2017, it's largely misunderstood about mentoring and sponsorship. So respondents collectively identified that they valued mentoring and sponsorship, but it was provided and more likely to be accepted or enjoyed if it was outside their organisation.
Mm.
So people aren't rating mentoring and sponsorship that's actually being given in their organisation. It was found that there is a significant numbers of barriers in the industry or challenges or roadblocks that are impeding advancement. And the call-outs were 28% of people were saying that their advancement, and remember we've got a very classic target market, are being prevented to advance because of a masculine working culture. Macho. So if this was 100% women, you'd go, okay, but this is largely men that responded. Resourcing level of the health and safety industry or the health and safety function in the industry was the second call-out. The third call-out was lack of support from their team. Lack of support from their managers.
Yeah.
And the fourth one was just, a perceived lack of experience at that very senior level. The next one was actually a lack of confidence or a lack of assertiveness about a leadership position. So that's sort of obviously our sweet spot. The other piece of feedback that was interesting is that they're just 44% were saying that largely their work isn't flexible. And we had some wonderful free text for things like there is a total absence of flexibility for males. And lots of people who are, I think, being punished because they are male or because they are wanting more flexibility but just not being able to get it. And lastly, the other thing that we called out is that gender pay equity in this industry is still largely understood. Basically, two-thirds of the industry said that they thought there was some sort of gender pay equity audit process, but over 60% basically said they didn't know and they'd never asked.
All right, so there is the possibility that there is a gender imbalance in pay, but it's not able to be clearly identified at this stage.
And the reason why I thought that was interesting to actually talk about those barriers is largely there was no barriers in the survey responses of people's teams.
Mm.
We're very quickly to blame ourselves and we're very quickly to blame our employer, but are we ever quickly able to blame a team? Because we never really realise anything by ourselves. So it made me think, and I've got a good text called Leadership Team Coach by Peter Hawkins that I put up on the show notes. Teams are going through such a significant change, and we as coaches and certainly people who work in organisations or consulting into organisations need to really take a long, hard look at their team and spend more time in it, because the team is the way in which you're actually going to be able to achieve your individualised goals or your organisational goals. Because teams now in organisations have to run strategy as well as operations at exactly the same time. They have to run and transform the business in parallel, which is unheard of. They have to also manage so many different expectations. So you can't, in 2018, lean in and just manage your process. You have to manage by leaning out your process and how it will be perceived by other stakeholders. So it could be customers or residents or investors.
You're right, but I think because that whole health safety umbrella has become so broad that if in doubt, it's a bit like school education, if in doubt, let's throw a subject into the curriculum because we think people need to know it.
Yeah.
It seems to me health and safety has become, if in doubt in a company and there's a possible hazard risk or disengaged area or something not working, let's just put it under that umbrella.
Yeah.
So the poor team that has never been prepared for it is now, the expectations of that team is much higher. So,
And I think even outside of the health safety space, teams are becoming much more interconnected, much more virtual, much more complex and much more diverse, because human beings have to be able to live with a whole lot more uncertainty now, and they have to belong to and be a member of so more different things. There's also a lot of challenge not by what you do but how you do it now and how you work with people. And obviously teams have to be, and you probably say this has always been the case, teams have to trust each other so much.
I mean, that's one of the prime elements. If you want a high-performing team, there has to be trust. There has to be the ground rules that identify it. What does the word trust mean to that team? And it has to be then respected.
Yep. So I guess my question to you, Judith, is you've coached either formally as a coach or as an organisational leader in a team. How do you get the best out of a team?
I think that's the $6 million question, isn't it? Because it's entirely dependent on the individual team that you've got, and each team, as you've pointed out already, is different.
Yeah.
Each team has its idiosyncratic nature.
So you never go in there with a preconceived idea?
No. You have to go into it, each of your teams, if you're managing several, with a fresh mindset of what have I got in this room, who have I got in this room, and how are we going to work to be a high-performing team to produce the outcomes that are required. I think the only thing my sort of mantra as a team leader is absolutely the capacity to read people, listen positively, and be well prepared. So in other words, you know what your project is, you know what's required, you know who is in the room in terms of you should do your homework, but that you can then use what is in the room to create an atmosphere of, well, trust, firstly, but secondly, collaboration.
Mm.
So people are happy to express their view and disagree and that sort of thing. So, but it's never easy. It's never easy managing teams. And I think you have to follow certain criteria when you're looking at setting up the team, and I know you've done work on that, and I think that's the important part of the conversation. If you're creating the team, what do you need to create in order to be able to forecast that you will be successful?
And I think one of the things about when you actually do select for a team, whether you be on a project or whether you're fortunate enough to be in a new role and you've got the ability to pick your team, you do need to actually workshop. You do need to actually say, look, what are our strengths?
Yeah.
What are our weaknesses? And even get the old butcher's paper out.
Yeah.
Don't assume anything.
No.
And don't go in there with preconceived ideas.
No.
Because I think the thing that I know about teams is they only work well when they're all together.
Yeah.
And I've seen teams rot just by the activities of one person.
Oh, absolutely. There can be one spanner in the works if you're not careful. And you can use tools. I mean, I use team management system.
So what's TMS?
TMS is a system where you profile each member of a team.
Mm-hmm.
They undertake an online assessment. It's a bit like psychological profiling.
Yep.
But this is about your preferences for working within that team.
Yep.
And what you bring. So, for example, my great strength is assessor developer. So what that means is my strength to that team is that I can assess an idea to see if it's applicable to us and then develop it into not necessarily putting it in place and not operationalizing it, but making sure that we have the conversation about a system to use that idea.
Yeah.
So I can assess and develop ideas. That's my prime strength.
Okay.
So we assess each member of the team and we have their prime strengths. And then what you do is you look at all the elements that are required for a high-performing team. If we have any gaps in them, and the one that my most important team that I worked in was a very, very effective leadership team. But our biggest gap was we had no one who was a concluder producer, no one who actually
finished things off.
Well, not necessarily totally finishing off, but actually check in that one, we had finished it to the standard we said we would do. But two, that we kept it going. So, in other words, we didn't just all walk away, which is what I love to
do. So, it's reported in the right folder.
It's all absolutely concluded properly.
Ticked.
And it's then sustainable so we can, you know, maintain it. So, we actually had to bring that expertise into the team or use what was in the room and get someone to develop that skill, which is exactly what we did. We couldn't actually bring a new member in. It wasn't appropriate.
Yes.
So I think, you know, look at the tools that you've got. Look at coaches to come in or a coach to come in and help you identify your team's strengths and weaknesses, and wherever possible then have a strategy to fill the gap so that everybody then is able to operate in their strength and not actually trying to cover a whole lot of things that they're not comfortable doing.
So certainly if you are in a position where you can select your team, I think there's a good call out there from Judith. You select a team member. This is actually something to write down. For their value, not for their skill set.
No, absolutely.
Because if you've got skill sets replicated, that means you've got a member of the team that you don't necessarily need.
Yeah, that's right.
You also need to, I think, if you are selecting, you know, I guess I've got sort of three other things. You're selecting for someone in your team who's committed to the purpose of the team. You're also picking someone who you know works well in a team.
Yeah.
I mean, some individuals we know, we've talked about it in past podcasts, they run a solitary journey. So might be the best skilled person, but if your team cohort doesn't need a solitary person, just don't pick them. And I also do always call out, if you've got the ability to pick a team, avoid those people who you know will derail you. They know, and I actually had a conversation with a team that I'm bringing together just last week from someone who is very mouthy in the corridors, but when he gets into his meeting where his team is talking about, it's radio silence. So that derailer of having lots and lots of opinions outside, I mean, I know what he's doing. He's trying very much to get the meeting outcomes in the meeting done by people around him, not him.
Yeah.
But it's really confusing. Like, it's mixed messages for me, I guess, as the sponsor of this team, as to who I'm sort of talking to and what I'm talking to them about. The other thing that I think if you've got the ability to select a team, and this is actually why I wanted to circle to it from the survey that we did, was select for the beauty of diversity. And there are four different types of diversity. Diversity, as you all know, is very important. It brings out the best in a team. It brings out the best in an organisation. But there are certainly four different types of diversity. I think people think immediately of diversity of, oh, we need 40% of our team to be female.
Yeah, the gender.
The gender thing. But the plan around identifying diversity is that it might not be gender. It might be other aspects of diversity that you're looking for. So gender could be one, but it could also be diversity of age, disability, ethnicity, culture. So not just you're not just actually picking someone who's a person from India, you're picking someone who has a cultural,
a particular cultural perspective,
which could be Indian.
Add value. Yes.
Yep. So you look for that. You know, I think that's the right thing to do. You're also looking for cognitive diversity. Yeah. So you're looking for diversity around how people think and how people interpret and how people predict and how people's brains work around shortcuts or heuristics. You're looking for that because you're looking for people who can problem solve differently.
Yes.
Yeah. You're also looking for, and this is something that you've done always very well, you're looking for people that actually have got a personality that you want.
Yeah.
You might have somebody, you might be an extrovert in a team surrounded by introverts. So you might want to actually have an extrovert to actually liven the team up a little.
Yeah, exactly.
And this last one that I actually thought was in this book, Leadership Team Coaching, interesting, is seek for diversity because that person, and it's called systemic positioning, can talk openly about what the investors need or what the residents need or what the customers need because they've either been one themselves or they intimately know from that team what others are expecting.
Okay.
And they even suggest when you actually are looking for that skill or if you need to actually bring that skill into your existing team is even put a chair in your team meeting with a little sticky note in the back saying this person, there's no one in the chair, but this person represents our investors, our customers, our clients.
So you don't forget the influences that, you need to take note of, but also it makes your thought processes more focused.
Yep.
And brings everybody to the same collective.
Yeah. And in our role as team coaches, we do team-based coaching as well as solutions-based focused coaching for individuals. Our role, if you are an existing team or if you're getting a new team, is to just find ways to leverage diversity and leverage all that skill set and all those values to be able to achieve the goal of the team.
Absolutely.
Yep. And that's it.
That's it.
It's time for the Australian Open, so thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys.
That's totally lame.
That is lame.
See you later, all.
Bye.